What is your name?
ESPN 97.5. KFNC. Mont Belvieu, Houston. A Gao Media Station.
Vasquez, beaten away by Buffon. And then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post!
Ramel Kiyoko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantarita! It's a Honduran connection.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Today, it is the best of Soccer Matters. Some of the best interviews picked out throughout the year. Twitter, Glenn Davis Soc, Facebook, Soccer Matters to follow us. And don't forget, here on ESPN 97.5, you can always get the podcast on podcastarena.com and on iTunes. Let's get going during this FIFA Women's World Cup. Let's catch up now with Jamaica Women's National Team Manager, Hugh Menzies.
Hugh, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Great. Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Yeah, these are great moments. You know, as you and I were talking before you came on here, you know, I've seen the amount of work and devotion and passion you've put in to the sport of soccer your entire career. So I was so excited when I saw you as the head coach of Jamaica qualify them for the World Cup. First, before we get into what effects it has had on Jamaican women's football in the country, what did that personally sort of mean to you and that group of ladies?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, we were stunned ourselves. And, you know, to be fair, you know, the girls was probably more stronger than the staff after everything went down. I mean, we were ecstatic. We knew how much work we've put in. And everything has come to fruition, and we just you know, we try to pinch ourselves to know that this is really real. But you're right, we put a lot of time and effort, and all thanks goes out to our staff, Lauren Donaldson, you know, that have put in umpteen amount of effort to get us to this point, and you know, and everybody else associated, the federation, and you know, obviously Cedella Marley. Is our big sponsor, and another company called Alacran has really stepped up to help us get to this point.
So let me go back to the 1-0 Group B win over Costa Rica, and that was the kind of do-or-die game there in order to make this all come to fruition and get you to a World Cup. Tell me a little bit about that game, what that game meant to you, and why, in your words, it kind of took you over a threshold of confidence.
Well, you know, we went into the competition knowing that we needed to win five games to get to the World Cup. So we planned ourselves, you know, from the first round of the competition, and then moving on to the next round. We knew that, you know, going up against the U.S. was going to be a tough task. So we kind of hold back on some of our players, and then, you know, we felt like we had an opportunity to go against Panama, who you know, was on the same track as we are of upsetting people and so forth. But we felt like we were a little bit more athletic, and then we thought we could have more of the game against them and go at them a little bit more. And, you know, we did it. You know, we did it going into the game. A game plan worked to perfection. We did give up a late goal for them to tie the game, and then, you know, obviously we went into penalty shootout, and you know, we practiced it all through the week, knowing that this is situation is going to happen, and you know, obviously we didn't miss a penalty kick, and we did a change in our goalkeeper right before the game was over, put in our shot stopper, and everything just worked out for us, and you know, and that credit goes out to the females.
One of the big discussions, and we're talking to Jamaican women's national team coach, they have qualified and are going to the World Cup in France next summer, Hugh Menzies. One of the things you've spoken a lot about are these kids and the amount of adversity in Jamaica that they have gone through. And you know, that's obviously something that is advantageous in competition. Can you speak a little bit more to that about some of the makeup of your players?
And you're right. I mean, you know, we had Khadija Shah, who just won the Guardian Award. I mean, the Guardian Award is an international award that, you know, Juan Mata won it last year. She just won it. And if you do a little bit of research on Khadija Shah, the adversity that she's been through as a kid, I mean, I just can't believe the kid's here. And bringing that to the football arena, I mean, this is like cupcakes to her, you know, asking her to go out and compete and go out there and execute for us, for the country. But, you know, the adversity has taken us through a lot of things. We went through adversity just being in the qualifier, and we use it to an advantage for us, because the players that we have, that's how they live their lives, you know, in Jamaica. And coming to that stage was just an opportunity for them to just shine.
Hugh Menzies joining us here, coach of the Jamaican women's national team, first Caribbean country to qualify for the FIFA Women's World Cup. It'll be in Paris and in France next summer. When you get a group like this, and in some ways they're raw, but they have all these wonderful qualities. What was the first thing as a manager you had to do working with this group and kind of putting this together?
Well, the first thing, we knew that physically we're superior than most people. The Jamaican nation is just blessed with talent as far as athleticism. We knew that wasn't, but however, we had to be physically fit to play 90 minutes. And that was a big, big question. We went out and hired Will Hitzelberger, our fitness coach, who I think, bar none, is one of the best in the country. And we brought him in and just to educate these players on nutrition and just taking care of themselves with the national team and also away from the national team. So the education process of that was what gave us an opportunity to really let them understand that, you know, we can do this if you just go out and do the extra things that we're telling you to do and just live your life a little different. And you know, they responded to that. And being in an environment where there's college environments and they're learning, you know, how to take care of themselves, it just added to everything. So, you know, the girls take full responsibility for this, and obviously Will coming in has really tremendously helped us through that. And that was the first thing we had to just get them to believe in that. And we went through that whole qualifying process since we started in Haiti with one injury to the group. So that part was one thing. And then obviously being on the stage, you know, hey, we're a small country, but, you know, in Jamaica we say we're liquor, but we're talawa. And it's just something that we believed in, and that was our theme and motto. Just go in. It doesn't matter what country we're in front of us, we're just going to take care of business.
Let's go back to Khadija Shah, because, you know, part of her story is she's lost brothers to violence, one to a car accident. She won the, as you mentioned, the Guardian Footballer of the Year Award because of some of these amazing things she's overcome. She seems like an incredibly humble young lady. She's a leading goal scorer. But she's at the University of Tennessee, so do you get to see her play a lot there? I mean, are you able to monitor her?
Well, thanks to technology, we get an opportunity to go out and watch video of her. You know, we knew her development. You know, she played with us in our WPSL year, so she ended up training with us in the summer. So we're very much in tune with what goes on with every player. We have players overseas in Europe and so forth. So we stay on top of things, and we see the development in their environment. And, you know, it kind of helps us to say, hey, this is the route we need to continue taking to help develop our country by using the resources we have here and overseas.
Hugh Menzies joining us, Jamaican women's national team coach. All right, so this historic success, now does this enable you to lobby and try and get more resources for the Jamaican national team? Like, what are some of the things that have come out of this amazing qualification? I mean, it's putting Jamaica on the world women's football map here. What comes out of it?
To be honest with you, Glenn, this is bigger than football for our country. So, you know, we're trying to change the mindset of how they perceive female athletes playing football. That was one of the biggest reasons why I took on this task when Sidel and Marley asked me to do it. We wanted to change the culture of how people perceive us. So what it has done so far, the government had a four-day celebration for us back in December. And within that four-day celebration, we got the keys to several cities. The sponsorship starts popping up. We had a massive fundraiser event that brought out 800 people with all the dignitaries and the people that really run our country. The Prime Minister have offered to help. The Minister of Sports have been unbelievable, Olivia Grange, on helping us get to where we are. And then also making them understand that preparing for this World Cup is even more, much more of a task. And we do need the support, whether it's financially or just spiritually. And we're on track of getting that right now. Obviously, FIFA is going to give us some help there financially. But you know, things are rolling right now. And I think the country's understanding the magnitude of what we've accomplished.
Yeah, it is a remarkable thing that you've pulled off. When you talk about the build-up now to next summer, where are the matches being played? I mean, obviously you got the plan in place. How much will you get together?
We've started our we're going to have a camp locally in Jamaica just to evaluate the pool of players. And then after that, we're going to have a set of games with Chile and Jamaica in February, and then we'll come to the States in April, and then play a match there, and then May we start head towards France by having a send-off game in Jamaica, and then we go to London, and then we go to France. So we have a plan in place, and we feel it's a good plan. We try to find teams that are pretty comparable in our bracket, which is a fairly tough bracket, but we're willing and able to get after it and prove to the world that we do belong.
Group C is where Jamaica will be with Brazil, Italy, and Australia, so a very, very tough group. I want to go back to Lorne Donaldson because we all know how influential, along with you, he has been in the women's game, and how important is he to this whole setup in combination with you?
Yeah, well, you know, to be honest, you know, as a kid growing up, we grew up in the same community, and Lorne was my idol, you know, as a kid growing up. So getting an opportunity to do this with him was just ecstatic for me personally, and him also. You know, he's made massive contribution not only to Jamaica but to the U.S. of the players that he's developed to build the U.S. program. And having him alongside us and going through the grind of getting us to this point, I can't ask for any better person to be able to be in an arena with that guy, because he just understands the concept of the game and the individual, and he's a true teacher of the game.
Hugh, when that final whistle blew and you won on penalties, what ran through your mind?
You know, I actually couldn't see the penalty kick because the cameraman was right in front of me. All I knew that Hubert Busby just jumped all over me, and I almost broke my back, but... You know, so I really didn't think anything at the time. I buzzed to get off me, you know. But you know what? I tell you what, man, that whole relief just came down, and just felt like, you know, I was in a trance. And I just can't explain it right now. But, you know, I'm sure you've been there as a player and so forth. But, you know, as a coach, it's just a little different because there's so much adversity these kids have gone through to get to this point, and I'm so happy for them.
Well, you can tell your heart goes out to your players. Listen, this is an incredibly significant moment. Congratulations to you, Hugh. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm sorry it took so long to get you on it, but I'm glad we did, because I think your story...
I'm glad anything for you.
But your story and how I know you and how much commitment you have given to the game, and then to see, you know, this piece with you in Jamaica, For me, it's remarkable. It's a heart. it's a heartfelt thing to see someone like yourself be such a huge part of this and do something that affects so many people, and that does not happen to many people. So congratulations to you.
And I want to give a shout-out to Cidella Marley and the Alacran Foundation for really, really stepping up, because a lot of people kind of walked away from this whole project, and they stepped up to the forefront and was right there with us from toe to toe, and is still there with us. And so a lot of shout-out goes to them.
You got it. Listen, the Marley family, huh? You got to love it in soccer as well, right?
Liven up yourself.
I think I know what music's playing in that Jamaican locker room before and after games. I think I have an idea.
Yeah, you do.
Hugh, thank you so much. What a wonderful achievement for you and Jamaica, and best of luck this summer in the World Cup and in your preparations before it.
Okay, thank you, Glenn. I appreciate it.
All right, that's the one and only Hugh Menzies. Wow, what a story that is. You're just sitting here thinking about that and these young ladies and these men who come and put this team together, and they become the first ever Caribbean nation to qualify for a Women's World Cup. And then you think about all the things that can happen now, the awareness that has been created for women in sport in Jamaica. It's truly exciting. So that was Hugh Menzies. You talk about storylines in this FIFA Women's World Cup, Jamaica qualifying for their first ever Women's World Cup. Stay with us on the Best of Soccer Matters. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. But a quick word here for Advantage BMW Midtown. My friends at Advantage BMW Midtown, Philip and Justin, these guys love soccer. Get down there. I've driven a BMW for years. I've leased, I've owned from Advantage BMW Midtown numerous times. I love the drive of a BMW. Got a 5 Series, absolutely love it. The other thing I love is the customer service at BMW. It's second to none. Advantage BMW Midtown has you covered with sales, service, and finance, and it can be done so easy. Get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown, AdvantageBMWHouston.com. They love soccer. They love football. They get soccer on the radio. And a reminder also for Cube 57, the official home for the Houston Dynamo matches this year. You can catch Albert Elise, Mauro Minotas, Kiki Struna, and all the Dynamo stars. Make sure you tune in to Cube 57. Catch the pregame show a half hour prior to the match. And then after it, it is the postgame show. Join Eddie Robinson, Cindy Bourbano, and myself on the Cube for all Houston Dynamo action in 2019. And speaking of the Dynamo, before we hit this break, HoustonDynamo.com for tickets.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to the Best in Soccer Matters. Hey, by the way, the place to be in Edo is the Kings Court, 903 Hutchins, in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. Now, Kings Court has 13 monitors for all your soccer watching desires and covers all the leagues from around the world. Rooftop deck is spectacular. It's got a great view of the stadium. Wonderful British and Indian pub-style cuisine is also a winner at Kings Court. Great food, staff, selection. It's the home of El Batallon as well, and a number of the supporters groups in Houston, including the Bayou City Blues and the Houston Red Army. Kings Court, HoustonTX.com. Get in there and say hello to Jay. Now, let's go on to Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway. It's in the Marquee Entertainment Center, 18 TVs, big screen. It's the home of the Houston Liverpool supporters group, who are flying high right now after winning the Champions League. It's Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway. And don't forget, get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com for July 20th, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich at Energy Stadium. Time now to catch up with rising U.S. soccer star and Leipzig star Tyler Adams. Tyler, thank you, as always, for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Well, I guess the first thing, and I know some of my listeners would love to hear the answer to this. When you make the transition from the New York Red Bulls in Major League Soccer, the first day you walk in that locker room at Leipzig, how accommodating, how accepting are they
of a guy who's going to come in there that they hope is going to help the club, but also is going to be competing for someone's job.
Yeah, I think the last part that you say is probably the biggest point, right? So you have to come in as a foreigner, and on your mind, you obviously want to go in, you want to make a strong impression, and you want to get minutes to get out on the pitch. But, you know, the biggest problem with that scenario is you want to make friends, but, you know, contradicting that is you're trying to take their position. So for me, of course, when you go into a new squad, you know, the first thing I look at is, of course, I'm moving to Germany. So, you know, you have the language barrier, you know, being a foreigner in a technically a small city in Germany, but it feels so big because everything's so new. But I come in here and I'm a little bit nervous, but really anxious to get started. And I think that you know, my calm confidence that I always carry with myself, you know, allowed me to come in and make a good impression along with making friends at the same time.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I think people, and I certainly have been impressed with, is just your maturity beyond years and your composure and things like that. How do you stay so grounded? How do you resist the trappings and sort of the temptations that, you know, we see professional athletes get sucked into all the time? You seem to have this down right now.
Yeah, so I think that for me, I really just give a lot of credit to my family and my brothers and, you know, the people that I surround myself with, because, you know, like you said, a lot of people get, you know, twisted into this mindset where, okay, maybe you're making money now and there's things like the glitter and the glam of the cars and you know, the next big trend. For me, it's more of, you know, taking care of business on the field, because, you know, that will set me up for the long term. And I enjoy every moment that I have out there, whether it's on the pitch, off the pitch with some close friends. And you know, the joy of, you know, being able to step out on a soccer field every day and call that your job is such a privilege. But, you know, remembering where you came from and, you know, the people that I surround myself, like I said.
Tyler Adams joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. Now, what about the manager? What's it like with Ralf Rangnick at Leipzig? And is he a manager that talks to players a lot? Is he kind of an autocratic guy? Is he democratic? Does he talk to you a lot?
Yeah, oh man, the coaching staff here has helped me tremendously, and obviously, you know, having a new coach like Ralf, who knows so much about the game and is so well renowned in Germany, it's been a privilege to come here, and you know, luckily for me, you know, his English is beyond perfect. He taught actually as a professor and learned a bit in England, so now having that ability to have conversations in depth with him before, you know, completely grasping the language has been tremendous for me. But whether it's video on the side after practice or if it's video after a game, you know, he's picking out the littlest of details that will help me, you know, move forward in the next step of my career.
You guys currently fourth in the Bundesliga behind Dortmund, Bayern Munich, and Mönchengladbach. I mean, every game is a game of importance. Transitioning from MLS to that type of pressure, I know you're equipped with all the tools, but was there anything unforeseen and unexpected that you got into?
No, so I think that for me, you know, the concept of pressure now here is, like you said, a bit different because, you know, in the MLS, if you have a bad season, you're not getting relegated. But now for us, you know, you have the pressure of, okay, if you have a bad season, you do get relegated. But at the same time, you know, now the club that I'm at is looked at as one of the, you know, the big four clubs almost in the Bundesliga. And, you know, we're pushing for a Champions League spot every year. So, you know, now as we sit in fourth place, you know, the pressure really becomes, you know, we need to make that Champions League spot because, you know, that makes your club, you know, so well known. And obviously the competition level for, you know, more young players to get that exposure is really important to the club and organization going forward.
Yeah, you got Wolfsburg at 38 points. You guys are on 42. They're in fifth right behind you. The fact that the Red Bulls plays in a similar system, obviously, in New York, how much of a factor was that in helping you to adjust here? Or were there some nuances that were maybe different that the public doesn't realize?
No, it was tremendous. I mean, the styles of play are, you know, almost identical. Of course, you have, you know, these little nuances and niches that you said, you know, that make a difference in helping you progress. But I think that for me, I was at a huge advantage coming in, you know, also playing under a coach in Jesse Marsh, who is now the assistant here, and how much he, you know, was able to grasp and progress as a coach in his 6 month, you know, tenure here so far has been able to help me so much.
Yeah, you got two of the biggest stories, you and Jesse Marsh at Leipzig. I think it's absolutely, I think it's wonderful. And then all the other young guys that are now in Germany, you know, the Josh Sargents, the Weston McKennies, you guys all seem to me to be mature beyond your years, but you're also guys that are really trying to kind of stick the flag in the ground for the American player in the Bundesliga. Do you feel any of that, or am I really just kind of reaching for stars here?
No, you're absolutely not reaching for stars. I think that, you know, like I said earlier on, is you know, as a foreigner, you just want to make it known that, you know, the U.S. isn't just one of those countries that is this huge country and soccer and football is not really, you know, talked about or practiced there. I think that you really want to make it known that, you know, we have this sense of optimism going forward of you know, a lot of bright young talent. And it's about optimizing that talent to the best of our ability because, you know, we can sit here and talk about, you know, how many young stars we have the potential of making. But now it's up to us, the guys that are being talked about, you know, to go out there every weekend and perform because, you know, we want to live up to the hype, so to speak. And I think that's important for us because, you know, we're working as hard as we can to progress and develop, to, you know, look forward to the things like the World Cup, the Gold Cup and stuff like that to really prove our cases.
You know, what's kind of befuddled me, Tyler, is people talking about the U.S. national team and, you know, why should we be interested? And I'm like completely the other direction. And I think there are people that are in my camp too. I'm totally enthralled with what's going on with young talents like you guys. I mean, you guys are the new Blooms. I mean, this has refreshed me with the national team. And I think as much as we didn't want to miss a World Cup, this is one of the positives that has come out of it now with all of you young guys. Do you get that sense sometimes that, you know, what are people talking about? We got all these great young guys that are developing and are going to be future stars of the national team.
Exactly. And I look at it the same way. You know, as much as it was a failure in so many people's eyes and let alone, I think people forget that, you know, we've reflected in the mirror and we have to realize that, you know, there were mistakes being made and obviously those games didn't go as planned, but, you know, with every failure is obviously an opportunity and would this opportunity have come this early for all these young players? That would be, you know, the biggest question to ask. And luckily enough, you know, I've gotten personally so many opportunities to grow and get this international exposure. And ultimately that has also helped me with, you know, my move to where I am today. And I'm fortunate enough for that. So I think that now as we progress and have shown that, you know, a bunch of young players can make a difference at the international level, more and more, you know, young players will get that opportunity too.
Yeah, it's super exciting. And there's American players making things happen in differing leagues around the world. We're talking to Tyler Adams of the U.S. men's national team, started with Red Bull 2, the reserve team of the Red Bulls, and through their academy, I believe. Then playing in Major League Soccer with Red Bull teams that won the Supporter Shield, and now on to Leipzig in the German Bundesliga, where he regularly plays in front of huge crowds each and every weekend. What can you say about the German soccer culture? I once, for ESPN, called a U.S.-Germany game in Dortmund, and the German soccer culture, to me, is as good as any in the world.
Yeah, it's second to none to come to a city where, you know, everybody, you know, awaits, you know, the 5 days leading up to the Saturday or Friday, you know, prepare for a big game. It doesn't matter if you're playing a team that's in relegation or, you know, the team that's in first place. You know, everyone's showing out and devotes their time to that weekend. It's been amazing, you know, to see the amount of people walking into a game and, you know, regularly play in front of, you know, 45,000 fans, you know, at your home stadium. It's been tremendous. And, you know, you immediately fall in love with it because, you know, growing up, these are the atmospheres that you dream of playing in front of. And I think that, you know, the big moments, those are, you know, the games that people show up in and the best players show up in. So you really want to get the best of it every single weekend.
You know, I've done thousands of interviews, and I always know in interviews whether people are really engaged with me or not. And even though you're in Germany right now, I really feel you and I are having a real conversation and a real interview where you're not distracted by something else. And that means a lot. What would you say to that to players in Major League Soccer? Because Major League Soccer players get some really good platforms, and I don't think they always take full advantage of them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, for me, it's always easy to have a natural conversation. I just feel that, you know, every opportunity that I get, you know, I'll pick up another follower or another fan out there that supports me. And I think that's the biggest thing and supports the culture of the game. And, you know, moving forward, that's all we want to do, right? We want to build a game. We want to have another young player be developed and look up to you. And I think that, you know, I just want to be the best role model that I can be for a lot of young players that, you know, have a dream of doing exactly what I was when I was in their shoes.
Yeah, I absolutely love that because my nephew was in and around, you know, the academy system in New Jersey. And I remember him mm-hmm. talking about you. And I had a conversation with him earlier this morning. And he goes, oh, that's awesome. I've been watching him in the Bundesliga. So you do have a huge impact. And you will sell tickets based off this interview, I guarantee you, for the March 26th game. So U.S. Soccer, say thank you to Tyler Adams. And thank you, U.S. Soccer, for getting him on the show. All right, so let's continue on here real quick. You as a player, sometimes the less glorious things are impactful things as a midfield player. You bring those. What are some of those ways that you feel personally, you, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, that you impact a game with the way you play?
Yeah, for me, you know, often I'm just often described as kind of like the little pit bull of the team. You know, I just want to be the player that guys don't really enjoy playing against. And I think that for me, you know, one of the guys that I've looked up to for, you know, the past couple of years is N'Golo Kanté. You know, everything that he does isn't the prettiest. You know, he's not in the position that he's in to make the game look pretty. You know, for me, he's one of those guys that, you know, you come out of a game or you win a championship, and most likely he's the reason why that you won that championship. You know, whether it's ground that he covers, the tackle that he might make 80 yards away from, you know, the goal that leads to a goal. You know, he makes all these little plays that really make the difference. And I think that I, you know, kind of try to emulate my game off of that and look at some of the best players in the world at why they're so good at that.
He's Tyler Adams, formerly of the New York Red Bulls, now Leipzig in Germany, fourth in the German Bundesliga table. What about Greg Berhalter? You know him well. You know the way his teams have played in Major League Soccer. What can you say about him that is connecting with you young guys now? Because managers have to change now dealing with younger players in the modern game.
Yeah, so it's really exciting. You know, obviously I've had the opportunity to play against, you know, some of Greg's team, and the football that they play is, you know, tough to play against, especially, you know, the way Red Bulls plays. I think that for me it's going to be exciting because I've had conversations with him now, and you know, he's so excited to have, you know, what will most likely be a full group going into these March friendlies, you know, obviously, you know, other than injuries and stuff like that may occur. But yeah, he's bringing an exciting style, and he wants to have a real identity behind this thing. So I think that, you know, as a young player to come and try to learn, you know, a different style of play and how exactly he wants to go about these things to get results, it will be fun, and I think I'm looking forward to it.
How important is it for a manager to be inspiring? Because, you know, we see some that are really struggling in big clubs around the world, and we see others that are sort of these inspirational guys, and you kind of are sitting there watching on television, and you go, man, I'd love to play for that guy.
Yeah, so I think that for me, it's almost less of the inspiring, so to speak, like not like a motivational speaker, but you want a coach that has all the players' attention. You want the players to buy into, you know, whether it's the system or the belief of how he sees the game the most. And I think that that's when you really get the most out of players. Like if you can have a coach that whatever they say, the players aren't going, you know, afterwards and saying, yeah, well, this is, you know, not really what we want to do, or this is not really how I feel about it, then you're going to get the maximum potential out of all of your players. And I think that going forward, that, you know, guys are excited to be in the national team and have an identity and really, you know, try to establish themselves in a team and find their role. And I think that's what's really important.
Tyler, take me back a couple of months ago, September 11th, 2018, playing against Mexico, you score. What was that feeling like?
Yeah, it was emotional, right? Because obviously it was such an important day in the year, obviously being on 9/11. And I think that's what was most important for me. You know, obviously getting a win is something that I wanted. To score the goal was kind of like a cherry on top. But it was, you know, the meaning of what it meant to more people, you know, that they could get a smile on their face for the day and, you know, not really have to think about such an emotional moment and, you know, that took place in a lot of people's lives. Obviously I was so young and it was hard for me to understand the complete impact that it had on myself, but, you know, the people around me and so forth. I think that was the biggest part for me.
Yeah. Wow. How insightful from you. Wappinger, New York, that's where you grew up. You used to drive back and forth to training. Your family drove you, I guess your parents, your mom. That's a lot of driving back and forth. But, you know, on those car rides back and forth, what was going through the mind of a young guy trying to make it in soccer? Were you doing homework? What was going on?
Yeah, so fortunately enough, you know, I had parents that were willing to make such a commitment. And you know, for me, it was such late nights sometimes. Homework on the way down, and you know, whether it would be light in the car and it would be too dark on the way back, so I'd get a meal. But I was fortunate enough to, you know, catch some sleep on some of those long nights while, you know, my mom had to drive and then, you know, the next day wake up and go to work in the morning. So it wasn't the easiest for her. You know, for a young kid like me, it's, you know, get out and have all this adrenaline to play soccer at 8 at night, and at 10 I'm going to sleep on my way home, and then wake up, go to school, and I can't wait for soccer the next day.
Yeah, that is incredible. There's one thing for sure, and it comes through in the interview, but it comes through watching you play. You truly put first the enjoyment playing the game, don't you? Isn't that a prerequisite for success and going on in the game?
100%. And, you know, like I always say, like, if you're not having fun doing what you're doing, then, then are you in the right profession, the right job? Is, you know, for me, I don't have to call it a job. I just get to go out and have fun every single day. And you know, what a blessing that is, and a huge opportunity for me is, you know, I want to make the most of it while I can. You know, you never know, you know, what could happen. And I think that for me, you know, going out there with a smile on my face is the least I can do every day.
He's Tyler Adams. Tyler, thank you so much from Germany, and thank you for staying up to do this interview with us.
Yep, thanks for having me on.
One way to describe that interview, mature beyond his years, Tyler Adams of Leipzig and the U.S. men's national team. One wonders where the positional play of Adams will be in the future under manager Greg Berhalter. Will it be as a right back, or will it be where maybe I believe he's best, in central midfield? All right, stay with us on Soccer Matters. More to come after the break. As we go to break, though, a reminder here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They are our presenting sponsors. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they'll bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. And also, don't forget, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, July 20th at Energy Stadium. Houston soccer fans, it does not get much better than this. These two legendary clubs right in our backyard. Get tickets for Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Ticketmaster.com. Everything's coming up.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to the Best of Soccer Matters here. A moment here for our presenting sponsor, the Daspit Law Firm. Now, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. Now, whether you get in a car accident, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, 18-wheeler, Daspit Law Firm has you covered. John and his firm are going to work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. They're going to give you the representation you need. DaspitLaw.com. They are proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And don't forget the place to be in Edo, Kings Court, 903 Hutchins, in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. 13 monitors down there for all your soccer-watching desires, covering leagues from around the world. The rooftop deck is spectacular at Kings Court, has a great view of the stadium, and they've got wonderful British and Indian pub-style cuisine. It's also a winner at Kings Court. Great food, staff, selection of bar and cocktails, all at great prices. KingsCourtHoustonTX.com. Go in there, say hello to Jay and Megan. Time now to catch up with former Secretary General of U.S. Soccer, Hank Steinbrecher, who has worked very closely with FIFA and has some real ideas on how maybe Houston can secure the 2026 World Cup bid.
All right, Hank, let's. I mean, the first thing I want my listeners to do is kind of get a sense of 94 and what your job was with U.S. Soccer at that time as a Secretary General and with the World Cup, and a very infamous World Cup here in the U.S.
World Cup organizing is a difficult task to begin with. But here's the structure. You start out with a rights holder for the World Cup, and that rights holder is FIFA. FIFA awards to a national governing body, in this case, the United States Soccer Federation, the rights to host a World Cup. They, in turn, set up a separate entity to protect any assets that the not-for-profit organization or the federation, not-for-profit federation, would have as a local organizing committee. So the two, local organizing committee and the federation, the hosting federation, work extremely closely together. They're tied at the hip to execute a World Cup. My primary role was the federation, to develop the federation and our national teams and soccer in general to be able to host the 1994 World Cup.
Hank Steinbrecher joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. So take me a little bit deeper into that. And, you know, how did we decide back in 94 what cities would be host cities for World Cup games? I know it was the political process, right?
It's an arduous political process. And let me give you a little bit more background information on what my history has been. Mm-hmm. I served, obviously, the 94 World Cup in the senior executive position. Also brought the Women's World Cup here, did all the political analysis and the bidding for the Women's World Cup as a hosting federation, and was very much involved with the Atlanta Olympics as well. But I started out as a venue director in the 84 Olympic Games, working for Peter Ueberroth and Alan Rothenberg. After I left U.S. Soccer, I was retained by FIFA to be the general coordinator for two of their World Cups, Youth World Cups, the U-17, which was held in Trinidad, ironically enough, on 9/11, and the Under-20 in Brazil. And I was also asked to serve FIFA as one of the five-man international delegation to go through each host city in Korea and Japan to analyze their bid to see which country and make a recommendation as to which country would be best capable of hosting a World Cup. After that, I negotiated with Morocco to represent them in the formation of their bid documentation. Along with Alan Rothenberg, we served as their key consultants, a vote of which we lost 14-11.
Let me add to that background. Before this is what makes Hank even more interesting. Hank was a college soccer coach as well. Began his coaching career at Warren Wilson College, Appalachian State, and then on to Boston University. Then you get into sports marketing with Quaker Oats. So at a time where it was not the easiest to make a living in soccer, you found a way to do a number of different things, obviously because of your talents and your intellect. So I want to take all that World Cup stuff and all that history that you have and knowledge and the process, and I want you to dumb it down for my audience and tell me, what is it going to take for us in Houston to get the World Cup here? Because I think a lot of people are concerned and confused with the criteria. We're not hearing a lot out of Houston here right now, and there's a lot of people who want this World Cup here, myself included.
The reality, Glenn, is you're not hearing much from FIFA. So consequently, you're not going to hear much from an local organizing committee, which is the United Committee, the United Bid Committee. And you're not hearing very much from the cities that are bidding. Everything's kind of on hold because of Qatar. And my guess is, having been in the inner halls of FIFA for a while, is that Qatar represents a significant amount of difficulties for FIFA. So their attention is on that cup with a high level of confidence that the 2026 cup in the United States will be executed in an extremely professional manner. I mean, we've done it before. We have all the human capital necessary. We've trained a cadre of extremely good sports executives. So right now is a lull period, but that doesn't mean you should not be working. If I'm analyzing your bid and I'm analyzing Houston, I'm sitting back as more than just a casual observer. You know, you've got a lot of things in place that are right and that are good. John Arnold is your chairman. Kennedy is the key man. I think you've got pieces in place and a great ownership of the Dynamo. Now, you're sitting probably, what, fourth on the table with the Dynamo now. The attendance is not one of the best in the league. But FIFA's not going to take that into consideration. And the inspection teams are not going to take that in consideration because those figures change from year to year and from generation to generation. 2026 is a long way away. You guys may catch lightning in a bottle with the team and be bringing in, you know, 30, 40,000 a match. So I think you have a lot of going for you, but my instincts tell me you'll probably go with 10 cities. Mm-hmm. The more cities you go with, the greater your exponential cost because you're repeating staff and expenses in every city that you're going to. So I think what you'll look at is ultimately coming down to about 10 cities, and you've got 17 now. So where do you guys fit within that group? And I know that within other communities, they're still debating whether or not they should have a public vote to support this. So it's a wide open battle right now. And you need to be doing some things that will get you ready for when the crunch comes.
What would some of those things be?
You know, if I were doing it again, and if I were looking at it, listen, your bid documentation has to be excellent. Your bid documentation will not win you the rights to host a World Cup. Mm-hmm. They will only eliminate you if your bid documentations are not good. It is ultimately a whole set of criteria, and it's a political process. And I believe that this World Cup, 2026, is going to be thinking about leaving a legacy for North American soccer. The title is the United Bid. What are you doing within your community to spur the development of the game? The goal of U.S. soccer is to be the preeminent sport, not a preeminent sport in the United States, to be the preeminent sport. What are you doing in a concrete way to help accomplish that? What is the legacy you're leaving for the youth after the World Cup goes? And there's a simple theory on bidding, and that's you win by bidding. You don't win the bid. You win by bidding. You get an infrastructure in place. You focus in on a legacy. You become strategically involved as to what that legacy ought to be for your community. There's a great deal of work that needs to be done. And you have some tough competition, but I think you have some competition that'll also go by the wayside pretty quickly.
So that was part one with Hank Steinbrecher, the former U.S. Soccer Secretary General. Part two is coming up. That does it for the first hour of The Best of Soccer Matters. More to come here. But as always, a big thank you to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. They are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. No matter what the accident is, car, motorcycle, industrial, construction, we don't want to get in accidents. But if we do, you got to have representation. Get the representation you need at Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Proud sponsors of Soccer Matters, ESPN. 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.